Our best work can't possibly appeal to the average masses. Only our average work can. Finding the humility to happily walk away from those who don't get it unlocks our ability to do great work. Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Making Comics Gutter Talk, episode number 8, I believe, and 8 is my favorite number. We have a fantastic show, but before I jump into that, that quote you just heard was from Seth Godin. He is an author, a public speaker, entrepreneur, and it is a smaller portion of a larger quote from The Humility of the Artist. And if you head over to makingcomics.com, our very own Patrick Urich awesomely illustrated this one out, so definitely check that out. If you have your own quote, we not only want to hear it, but we want to see it. So take that quote and illustrate it out for us, and then send that over to me at ag@makingcomics.com, and we'll talk about it. We'll maybe even post something about it, but send it over. We are definitely interested in what inspires you all as artists, and we want to see how that inspires you. So draw it out for us. Let's see. Let's just move into this thing. Today's show is about an hour or so long. I know we've had some long ones, but really the content is just so worth it. And it's a really cool one today. We travel across the Atlantic and talk to Palle Schmidt. He is all the way over there in Copenhagen, Denmark. So Palle is a artist, a writer, teacher, and our new friend. So it was a really, really great talk. We talked a little bit about scripting, which is the theme for February, or part of the theme for February. But it, you know, as always, our conversation sort of spread out a little bit. And I don't know, there was a lot of good information in this one. And it was just a really fun talk. So I think you guys will enjoy it. So enough of me. And here we go. Palle Schmidt, enjoy.
But I don't want to hog all the airtime. I'm actually really interested in how you came about your thing. I think Adam probably had some questions along that.
Yeah, we'll jump into that. Actually, I want to before we jump into all that, I just want to do the introductions.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Yes. Because we've been talking for, you know, a little bit now, and we haven't even said our names. So I guess we can go ahead and jump into that now. We're sitting down with Palle Schmidt. You are located in Copenhagen, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Cool. And it's evening now. We put the kids to bed, time to relax.
Yeah, sort of. You might hear a little bit of noise in the back there.
If the gas hasn't
started working.
Right. Now, I was listening to a few of the of your own podcasts that you have on comics for beginners.
Cool. Right.
And one of the things you mentioned in the first episode is that there's very little comics in Copenhagen.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sitting in my little kitchen here, and you could probably cram us all in this room.
there isn't a whole lot
of community going on. Well, I guess it's a small country, about 5 million people. And so it comes and goes, you know. When I was starting out in comics in the mid-90s, I was kind of hovering on the outskirts of the Danish comics industry. We had several magazines, we had fanzines, we had lots of stores. You know, they were opening like flagship stores in the pedestrian walking street in the middle of the city, and, you know, expensive addresses and stuff like that, where they sold like artwork, original art and posters and all kinds of stuff, even to tourists. And so it was a really a booming time for comics in Denmark. And but I missed that wave completely. When my first book came out in 98, all of that had just gone away. It had dried out. So it was like I went to get my surfboard, and then when I got to the beach, it was just miles of desert.
Oh, no.
Nothing going on. So, well, it comes and goes. Right now, we have a boom in talent and the kind of stories that are being told. I mean, people are ignoring the market and just doing their own thing, telling the stories that they want. Where I've heard it many times through my career that people are saying, well, if you want to make a living out of this, you have to have your target audience has to be children. But I don't make comics for children, so
we're right.
Yeah, and just, you know, my first U.S. comics convention was just a few years ago, actually, because my book, The Devil's Concubine, was coming out in the States, a 75-page graphic novel, that I put out over here first, but I tried pitching to the U.S. first for many years. But what the point is, when I got to the U.S., it was like I had been in a box for 10 years, and somebody finally took the lid off, and I'm like, wow, look at all this. There's a comics industry. It's like I've been talking into the corner of the room, right. And you turn around and say, oh, look at all these people. Yeah. So it's not that I feel like the grass is greener over there. It's just that it's a bigger lawn. So even if I'm a niche inside a niche, there's still a chance of actually finding an audience for the kind of stories that I want to tell and for, you know, Denmark. Even if you could sell to all the people who buy comics in Denmark, you would still not be able to make a living because, yeah, it is what it is. It's a small country, so.
So is it, with the current rage going on here in the States, I mean, is it, has that
reached? There's a rage?
Well, so I take it hasn't reached there yet. I mean, basically what I mean is that, like, you know, with all the movies and the whole, you know, with everything out, what's the fervor like over there?
Do they like the Avengers? Did everybody go see it?
Yeah, I mean, I think people like the Avengers, but I don't think a lot of them know that it's a comic book. I think
right.
That it's a movie. So
yeah, I was gonna say that, Adam. I'm a longtime believer that the two things aren't connected, like, at all. Right. Like the pop culture kind of consumption of comic book franchises and the consumption of literature aren't connected. Like, I don't even think they're the same communities of consumers whatsoever.
Maybe some overlap. I was just listening to another podcast today, actually, Deconstructing Comics, that podcast, and they had visited Bergen Street Comics in New York, which I know. I've been there, and they are basically stopping to sell DC and Marvel books because that's not, you know, what they're selling. They're selling a lot of indie books and comics for kids, but not a lot of the big two. So, you know, there's a shift going on for sure.
Yeah, no, I read an article about that, right. And it was a big move, especially because nobody. Well, it's stuff that I feel like Scott McCloud's been saying since, you know, 2000 when he published Reinventing Comics, but,
right.
You know, because he predicted the future and everybody thought he was nuts. He's like, oh, people will be reading comics on their devices in 5 years. And everyone's like, dude, Scott McCloud, you're so weird. Like, you know, like, and now, you know, Comixology exists and people do. I mean, it's easier for me to get digital comics on Comixology than for me to get a monthly subscription in print comics.
Yeah, it was hard to predict. I mean, that right. You could cut out the middleman also. I mean, with the web comics and stuff like that, there's a lot of artist empowerment going on that you can basically be a one-man army like Jason Brubaker, for instance, or you know, yeah, countless others. Well, to just put your stuff online and kind of do your own thing and with Kickstarter and all these things, it makes it easier for you to reach an audience without the help of the guardians,
right.
the gatekeepers in publishing industry.
And the product has become divisive, right? So, like, I see it in that decision for that one store that you mentioned, making the decision not to sell those things, because if you want a client base that's into art and, right. like, coming to buy it because they want to buy quality books,
right?
If they see Spider-Man all over the place, that's not what they see. They don't think good artwork. They think, like, you're pushing mainstream superhero comics and that's it.
Right. Yeah, but you can still find basic mainstream superhero comics in Barnes and Noble, for example, and
right.
Yeah, not over here.
Although less and less, because Barnes and Noble, I think Marvel just announced they're pulling completely out of Barnes and Noble
really?
3 weeks ago, yeah. Because they weren't selling. It's not worth the financial investment.
They're making all their money making movies now, I guess.
Right, right. And the comics just serve as almost advertisements for the films, which, you know, when you go to Comic-Con for the last 5 years, because Marvel's like the one company there that has a booth, a huge, huge display for booth, not selling any comics.
Yeah.
Like, they only sell the movies, you know, it's weird. So.
Right, right. They've had a good run of movies. I mean, it's great to see these
oh, no, they're awesome.
Guys with the underpants on the outside of their, you know, that we've been reading and loving since we were kids, and to actually see them in action. I mean, they even made Captain America look cool. And he was always looked kind of like a doofus with the little wings on his...
Right, yeah. Right. Well, and it was cool to see them take a chance. I mean, that was my big moment. I mean, my huge moment was, 2 years ago when that came out? And Joss... I mean, I remember it was like the weekend it released. Mm. And I went to see it, and then the sales figures came in, and I was like, my favorite director in the entire world just directed one of my favorite franchises, which 10 years prior was one of the more unpopular comic franchises in the Marvel stable. And everybody in the world likes it. I was like, what is happening? Like, I'm supposed to be the guy in the corner that everybody picks on, and then I'll listen. It's like, they're cool. It's a surreal post-modern world that we live in.
Right, so. And Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man, I mean, and Sherlock Holmes. The guy's 52 years old, and I mean, well, who saw that coming? The guy was checking, for Christ's sake. I mean, he was...
No, nobody.
Now he's the biggest action hero there is. Him and Liam Neeson, who's also, like, 70. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird. Weird times. But, yeah, interesting.
What was your first intro into comics, then? And about how old were you?
I remember reading comics before I could read, where I was just looking at the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Like cowboy comics and stuff like that. But I distinctly remember picking up, I was on vacation in Germany, of all places, and we were in some kind of supermarket, and they had comics there, which they didn't in Denmark. And just all the display of all these fancy costumes and all the colorful characters, it just blew me away. And I went straight back to the hotel room and just started drawing these new markers I'd just gotten. Mm-hmm. I guess I was like 8, 9, maybe. Yeah, and I would design characters for years, just drawing superhero supervillains and superheroes, and you know, with just a name and a character pose. Didn't know what I was doing. I guess the first kind of comics work was, I always used to draw in class instead of listening to the teacher. I was that kid with this drawing.
I think we might have all been that one.
Yeah.
Did you get into any kind of art education as you got older?
I did not. I, for some reason, I just completely put that out of my head. Like, that wasn't even a possibility. I always just knew instinctively that that's never going to work. So I'm not even going to look it up anywhere to see if it's possible. You can't make a living drawing. That's crazy talk. You can't do that. So I went to school like everyone else, and I, you know, get a job and a haircut and all that you're supposed to have.
Right.
And I went to the university. I studied English and film. Then I realized that I didn't have to be good at math to go to the School of Architecture, which also interested me at that time, anyway. Making floor plans and building models and stuff like that. So I went there for a couple of years until I flunked. Like, there was a midway test you had to pass to be able to move on. And I was doing illustration work on the side. I was making illustration work and some comics, actually, for a Danish role-playing game magazine that I ran with a couple of friends for many years. We did that. So I guess my storytelling skills were kind of developed in an interactive storytelling environment with role-playing games, not the kind you see today where people are bashing each other on the head, running around in the woods with rubber mallets or whatever it is they have. We were just the Dungeons and Dragons kids sitting around in somebody's kitchen, rolling dice and eating potato chips.
So you didn't have the cardboard, styrofoam, duct tape, swords that you were...
We did not have those, no. Yeah. No, I always found that weird. So, it's like the kettle calling the pot black or whatever it is.
Right,
when I'm thing, the other guys are the nerds. I mean, we were the real role players. They were nerds in the woods beating each other up. What was that?
They were just actors.
Yeah.
Cool. So, how did you get into Comics for Beginners? Then your site, like, how did you make that transition?
It's not so much a transition as it is. I've been blogging for years about storytelling and writing. I've been moving a lot more into writing. I've been living. I've actually been living from drawing since '98. When I finally jumped out of the closet and got my first illustration gigs and started getting paid to do what I was doing anyway, and then kind of moved away from that for a couple of years, wanting to do more writing, wanting to do more of my own stuff, and so I've been blogging for a couple of years about just the process of that, and then I guess something clicked that. There is obviously a bunch of books on the market on how to make comics, but they tend to skip over that first step of how do you construct a story. And if you don't have a story, what are you going to draw? It's great to do all the character poses like I did when I was a kid, but without a story, it's never going to be comics. It's just, you know, a character pose.
Right, and it's one thing to hone your craft, but you got to put that craft to work at some point.
Right, and some of the stuff that I've learned through the years, I'm just trying to compile that into an understandable format and help other people get over some of the same hurdles. Like you said that you listened to the first podcast I did, which was called The Three Biggest Mistakes of My Comics Career.
Right.
If I had to go through all of my mistakes, we would be here all night, but I just picked three, I think the first one was just not getting started. Like I said, it took me many years to even think it was possible. The second one is not seek out any peers, other people who were doing what I wanted to do, to see how they were doing it and seeing that it was actually possible. I can't even remember what the third one is. It's recorded a while back. But anyway, I had many insecurities and fears before I started out. I mean, just looking at artwork, and I could see they used some kind of blue pencil underneath there, and I'm like, what is that blue pencil? Who is so mysterious? Nowadays, obviously, you just Google it and you find out, but I mean, there are many ways to make comics, and yeah, so I'm just trying to pass on the knowledge that I have and maybe help somebody out there get over some of the hurdles that snagged me for quite a while when I didn't get started because I was insecure about the craft or the tools or the kind of paper they used. I mean, the format, all these stupid things that you worry about.
Well, those, I think, are the very basic steps that you need to know. So in a way, it's the foundation, which I find important in a lot of things. So what was your biggest hurdle then, outside of the I don't want to say fear or the just not getting started, but what was your biggest hurdle as far as the craft was concerned?
With comics?
Yes.
I think illustration is easier because you read a text, maybe it's a short story or an article or whatever, and you read that and you kind of find one image that you can sort of pull from that. And you draw that,
mm-hmm.
But the storytelling part of it is definitely what's hard about comics, and you have to draw so many damn pictures on every page to get the story across, and finding some of those shortcuts, graphic shortcuts or storytelling devices that can ease it, make it easier for you and help you reach your goal faster, because obviously if you spend a week on a page, you're never going to finish your story, and then it doesn't really matter. So just the speed of it. I'm obsessed with finding faster ways to draw still. I mean, I'm thinking about that all the time. How can I cut like a couple of minutes out of each page?
Who are the artists that kind of inspire that in you, do you think? Like, because I just looked at a bunch of your artwork and I was I have some guesses, but I was wondering if you wanted to cover that.
Well, a major influence, I think, is Frank Miller. Mm-hmm. His Daredevil run in the 90s, I think it was, that was a huge influence. Because it's noir, basically. Right. I'm a huge fan of crime noir. And in the later years, obviously 100 Bullets, mm-hmm. The Devil's Concubine is as close as you can get to a blatant ripoff of that style of 100 Bullets without being dragged into court.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was fortunate enough to bump into Brian Azzarello in Angoulême a couple of years ago and apologize in person for ripping off 100 Bullets. But my next book, it looks very, very different. And Sean Phillips's work in Criminal is one of the most amazing books that have come out in the past decade, I think. It's an amazing collaboration that Brubaker and Phillips have. And I think Phillips is one of those artists that when you look at his art, it just blows your mind. It's in a way, he has that Monet effect, where you look at it from a distance and it just looks amazing, and then you go a little bit closer and like, wait a minute, he just threw some brushwork on here, and there isn't really a lot there. So he must, the amount of pages that he puts out, I mean, he churns out pages, and they're all beautiful. But but when you look closely, there isn't a lot there, but there's just enough to tell the story and make it look amazingly cool. I mean, he's an amazing artist.
The guy who I feel like does that for me in the last couple of years has been Jeff Lemire. Like, I think I read Essex County 2 years ago, and it was a big, thick graphic novel, and I love big, thick graphic novels. Like,
right.
I get to sit down and read for like the next 2 days, as opposed to like but the simplicity of his line work, also he kind of has a flat style. It's a very unique. He did. Do you know him at all? He did. He did the one where the kid has antlers. Now I'm forgetting it came out through Vertigo 2 years ago though. It's just a very unique, and it's a very Jeff Lemire style. And when I first saw it in Essex County, I was like, this could go either way. People could really love this, or people could be really like, this is too simple.
Right.
But it's perfect. And he pumped out like a huge volume. He's a writer slash artist, and he gets work in mainstream. I mean, I think it's crazy to see that happening right now, where all the jobs are kind of on like him and the colorist, if he has one, to do the comic, you know.
Right. I've always just been a one man army. Right now, I'm working with a U.S. writer for a monthly book, or it's a creator owned thing. I won't go into detail because it hasn't been announced yet, but I'm doing painted art for that, and I finally feel like my hand has taken over and is now deciding, whereas with The Devil's Concubine and some other stuff, I've been kind of trying to copy other artists, and now I'm just letting my hand do whatever it wants, and amazingly enough, I like the result a lot better, and it's a lot faster, actually. There isn't a lot of painted art out there, so if you just sit and look at whatever's in the Marvel or DC lineup, you would think, oh, I have to draw like that to be able to be to be a real comics artist. And I just found out that with a brush and some watercolor wash, I can just get so much more done faster, and it looks great. I love it, and I love the lucky accidents that appear when I'm just kind of zoning out and just splashing on paint. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, no, so. the I just was looking at Stiletto, and I love how did you approach doing the watercolors for those pages? Like, did you color it?
Yeah. It's all hand painted. I did some color correction in Photoshop afterwards, but basically it's all done in these grayish yellowish tones.
Did you scan the inks before painting on did you paint on top of your inks, or how did that work?
For Stiletto, actually, I inked it all in pencil, you know, one of those click minor pencils, and I scanned it in, and I adjusted the contrast to make the line blacker, and then I put some photos in the background some places and toned them down, like, to 20-30%, and then printed it out and painted on all over that.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool, man. That's a unique process. That's pretty awesome.
You live and learn. You try stuff out, and I was looking at some of my sketchbook drawings, and I really liked the life that was in those. I'm like, why is it so hard for me to make comics if I could just draw it like that? Mm-hmm. It's so much faster. It's like it's almost like the less I care about it, the better the result, and the faster it is to draw. It's such a weird.
Because you're letting your talent almost kind of like move through you, because you've done the work to put into your hand for years and years and years. I totally get that.
But I was sitting next to another Danish artist you might know, Peter Snibia. He did Books of Magic, God Somewhere. Mm-hmm. He had great run on Starman.
God Somewhere is like one of my favorite books.
Oh,
like,
really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Peter's a good friend and mentor for many years. I've been sitting next to him at his studio for 12 years, and he taught me a lot, but he also taught me wrong things because I was trying to copy him. And he's such a great inker. I mean, the guy, he's just a wizard with a quill. And he never makes any mistakes. And he just sits down with a blank piece of paper that even has the DC logo printed on it with no fear, and just sits with his blue pencil and ink and just inks directly on top of that. And I was trying kind of to copy him in my inking style, but my hand, I'm a really fast drawer. I'm very impatient.
Right.
And to be able to have that precise, slick line artwork, you really have to be very, very patient and draw very slow and meticulous. And my hand would just go, I would screw up. So I think that maybe 40% of the time I spent on The Devil's Concubine was probably spent doing corrections.
Well, yeah, you're kind of...
I would make mistakes all the time.
You're almost approaching it the way... Because I painted for a long, long, long time. But I also never was formally taught to paint. And I realized much later that I wasn't doing it. So, like, after watching Bob Ross videos with my students, I would teach them. And I'd watch him paint with all the techniques that he'd learned, you know, to make it easier for himself. I'm like, whoa, that dude's so much more efficient at painting than I am. Because, like, I'll work for, like, days on the same painting, but I'm just building up layers and layers and layers to achieve the visual effect I'm trying to arrive to. It sounds like that's kind of the way that you work on a page. It's like
the same technique for illustration work. A lot of the time it would be painted art. So I just took what I learned and went with that instead of trying to be someone else.
It's interesting.
And also because of the printing techniques now, you don't have to have the line art separate and the flat colors and all that. You can just paint it art and just send a PDF to the printer.
Well, and I've been thinking about that a lot lately because right now we're in this renaissance, especially in the stages of the process you and I are talking about currently, because... You know, Fiona Staples, and I was saying this to one of our editor-in-chief. You know Fiona Staples? She does Saga with Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
But she just kind of blew the lid off of, like what was possible in a mainstream, highly publicized comic art form.
Yeah.
She produces everything, and if our readers haven't read Saga, it's all done completely digitally. It's a comic that's built with digital painting, and it looks digitally painted, but it still looks cohesive, it looks fast, and it looks like it has a lot of life in it. But what's insane is because she's not done that, she kind of proves that it's a preference to do penciling, the preference to do inking, where for the last 60 years, it was a requirement to do penciling and a requirement to do inking. And we're kind of at a point now where digital art has gotten... to it where it's kind of like, you might not want to approach it with pencil and ink for your style that you're trying to achieve, because you're not going to get it. Like, you're not gonna maximize your efforts there.
See, that's the thing. You have to find what works for you and just go with that, and try to make the best of whatever talent you have, and be as fast as possible, because if you're not fast, you're not going to be producing anything. So,
all right, I'm going to ask a beginner question then. I'm going to jump in here for a quick thing.
Go.
So how do you know then what avenue to take? I mean, how do you know if your art is built better for one or the other? What is that a sign? Is there like a flag? You know, does someone come up and hit you over the back of the head? Like, what is...
Well, I guess the one sign is the frustration. I mean, if you're constantly frustrated with the way you're working. I mean, I drew the first book I put out was a 46, 48 page comic in black and white, only published in Denmark, luckily. I did all that with a dip pen, with a quill, because that's the right tool. So I used that, and I am never using that again.
Yeah.
So you just have to try it out, and I mean the frustration with that tool. I mean, I would get a thin line when I wanted a thick one. I would put lots of ink on it. I would dip it and then put it on the page, and nothing would come out. And I'm like, come on! And then there comes all the, like the Heinz bottle.
Right.
It was just so frustrating. It would rip the paper. I mean, I would hurt myself. You know, stick it in my hand.
Well, accidentally. Devin, I had a meeting with him last week, and he produces a lot of his stuff in Manga Studio, and he taught me a bunch of Manga Studio. Like, I'd never used it, but I instantly knew I couldn't work in that. Well, not right now, I can't work in that medium, only because I'm a graphic designer, and when I'm on the computer, I go into nitpicky graphic design mode, and when you're in nitpicky graphic design mode, it means all the lines need to be perfect, everything needs to be formed correctly, everything needs to be balanced. But for comics, I feel like I have more fun when things look more organic and accidental, and almost kind of it almost looks like they accidentally are bringing you into a world that exists, as opposed to when I'm designing a logo where it's like a tightly wound thing. And I was like, I can't work on the computer to ink my comics because no. I'll zoom in and I'll look at all the imperfections and be like, what if everybody can see these?
Right.
There's
a good hack for how to when you're doing your cleanup in the computer, never zoom in more than 50%.
Right.
To remove all the flecks and stuff from the scan, because if it's not visible at 50%, it's not going to be visible in print either. But it's so easy to go in and zoom in and do little nitpicky details on a line here and there.
I'd rather, before anybody even gets on the computer or starts designing, I'd love for beginner artists to sit down with basic shapes cut out of construction paper and try and arrange them on a page so that it looks good. Like, I mean, it looks balanced, because I feel like the biggest thing that I saw in Jeff Lemire's work, just to go back to him, was not that all of his drawings are very simple, very, very, I mean, more than simple, and very sketchy and very, like, kind of messy and not very realistic, not following any of the rules of, like, comic book telling, except for the fact that he knew how to show depth within his panels, like, because he had a foreground, middle ground, and background in all of his panels. He knew how to construct perspective, you know, that what I just said. And then he also he also had this ability to balance the panels, like with that kind of unconscious golden ratio thing, like in the where you know the balance.
I never got that. I never understood it at all.
Well, just from a designer standpoint, artists intuit it. It's an intuitive thing for artists, but like all art unconsciously moves so that it's balanced to being not completely dead on center, unless it's for like static imagery. But even then, like, we tend to move the center of interest above the middle and into the top third or the lower third or a third of the art. But we unconsciously all do it. When you look at a lot of artwork, you tend to start internalizing that as being balance. Does that make sense? Like, you start seeing that because all the artists do it. It's the golden ratio is in, like, the way that flowers bloom and the way that the universe is arranged and da-da-da-da-da. It's the Fibonacci sequence. The mathematical sequence.
Yeah, I've been. We're actually having these an article, but I never understood them for real.
Yeah, we're having an article come out because apparently French comic artist Tintin, the guy who did Tintin, I can't remember his name. Yeah, he used to compose his pages in the Golden Ratio. Like you can see how he did it, and Bijan. Right. One of a guest writer for the blog is actually going to be talking about how you can find it in your panel layouts for an individual page of art.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'll have to come read that then.
Yeah, for sure.
I think one of the hardest things to teach is composition because, it's intuitive.
Right.
You just feel like, well, you should move that character 2 inches to the left. Why? Mm. Well, I can't tell you. It would just look better. So...
Yeah. And in fact, what's kind of cool is I think he's even going to be including blue line templates for you to throw onto a page layout if you were printing it for yourself. So, like, if you were trying to do something that kind of mathematically lined up, he has the circles, the concentric circles that'll show you where some objects need to be in order to balance the whole thing out. It's interesting. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I was never good at math.
I suck at math. I find science interesting in that manner. Like I get kind of like I love looking for it because it helps me know when something's done more than anything else. In a way that's not just my internal knowing of that. Like I can see it being done.
I was a meteorology major, and then I took calculus, and then I was an English major. So that's what math did to me.
Right. Right. It's too logical.
It's way too logical. I don't think logically. I want to bring this back a little bit to scripting.
Right.
How does this all? I mean, everything that we've talked about so far. Can scripting help keep things on track? Can it help with the speed of things? Like what?
And you're talking scripting in terms of having a script for your comic.
Yes.
I would say absolutely, yeah. I mean, the first video of Comics for Beginners, I start out with talking. I should say that it's a site with tutorial videos and a lot of blog posts and templates and whatnot, podcasts, all sorts of stuff kind of scattered around the 10 tutorial videos that take you through the steps of making comics from start to finish. And my first episode, I say a lot of artists start with a blank page and a vague idea of where they want to go, and then you hear the screeching sound and we freeze the frame, and I say that I would not recommend that. And I would totally, if I had to give just one piece of advice, it would be to have a story, like a map laid out before you start driving off in the middle of the dark, in the middle of the night. You know, you'll end up in the ditch somewhere. You will never finish if you don't know where you're going. A script, absolutely. And that was one of the first mistakes that I made as well. I have a couple of ditched comics projects that didn't have that script. Even for a 3-page story, you at least internally need some sort of an outline, at least, you know, a beginning, middle, and an end. There should be room for experimenting along the way. You can change a character design, you can change dialogue, obviously, you can change a location even, or you can change a scene completely, or take it out, or put something else in instead, but you need that skeleton to sort of build on, because what happens if once you're a couple of pages into your story, you will start doubting, is this good enough? Am I ever going to make it? Is this just flat? Is this interesting? Is this boring? What is it? I mean, is anybody even going to want to read this? And it's awful. I mean, the first page I drew is awful. I'm on page 5 and I'm looking at page 1. It's just awful. I have to go back and change that. And then you'll never get to page 10 of your 10-page story because you're always going back and redrawing. And I just feel that if you have a script and if you even maybe got some feedback on that script, So if you can tell the story in script form and get feedback on that, then you kind of you're set. You can kind of put the fear aside. It's not like you lose it completely, but you put it in the corner and say, "Shh, sit over there. I'm drawing this, and you don't get to bother me anymore. I'm drawing this. The script. We already agreed. This is locked down. We're doing this." I think that helps tremendously.
It's interesting because I, from a lot of first-time comic creators, I think the most lethal thing I always hear is they want to create, when they don't know that they're saying this, usually they frame it a lot differently, but they want to create like almost a franchise character in a monthly series. Right. And I'm like, no. Write a short story. Like, figure out how to write a short story that has an ending where you don't need to read any more to understand what's going on, because you may not ever want to work with that character after you actually get through this whole process. Like, ever again. You're going to be like, this character was terrible. Like, and at the very least, I'm always like, always aim to give yourself like a sense of completion at the end of a project.
Right.
Like because we, as artists, we hate it when we regret not finishing things, because our life is riddled with, usually almost all artists I know, their past is riddled with projects they haven't actually finished, you know, and like they don't want any more of those, because the ones that we already have.
You're wearing your scars, like, that was a project I never finished. But finishing a project, what that does is it builds confidence. Even if it's just a 3-page story, you can say, I set out to make a 3-page story, and gosh darn it, I made a 3-page story. Right. Look at me, woohoo. But if you set out to make a 70-page graphic novel, and you do 60 pages of it, you feel like a total failure.
Right.
And you've done 60 pages of comics. That's much better than 3. But but it still feels like a failure, because you never made it. You set this goal for yourself. It's like you don't start out running a marathon. I mean, you start out running half a mile, and you see how that goes. And then maybe when you've run that half mile, it's like, hey, I've still got energy. I can run a mile.
And
you feel confident that way.
Interestingly, you might find out, right, like that you might not even be a person who likes running marathons, if you get to the marathon level. I think Stephen Bissette just wrote something where he's like, I don't take on graphic novel series, because all the good graphic novels that you look at, whether it be Watchmen, you know, or these other ones, sometimes take you up to a decade or a half a decade to complete. And he's like, I don't want to work on projects like that anymore. Like, all-consuming. I am too experimental. I want to do a different style over here and do this over here. And only being able to do something that takes up all of your time, and that's the full focus, may not be the kind of creator that you are.
Right. That's how I always felt, that I was the kind of creator I was the kind of person, the kind of artist that would only take on a project that lasted like a week or two, maybe, and then I was out of there. And now I've committed to drawing this U.S. book for almost a year, and I'm just enjoying the hell out of it. It's very surprising to me that I also thought that I only wanted to do my own stories. Doing illustration work for so many years, I was like, I'm sick of making other people's stuff look nice. I want to make my own stuff look nice. I want to tell my own stories. But this collaboration I have with this writer is just going great, and I'm just enjoying it, really. Just digging in and doing one thing for so long, it's great.
As the artist, do you find that it actually helps your art if someone else is working on the writing?
That's a tough question. I mean, I would, under normal circumstances, I would say no, because I'm also a writer myself. But I guess once I'm starting drawing, I've already, the story is locked down. Whether it's my story or someone else's, I don't start unraveling the sweater, so to speak. I mean, I tend to put that part of my critical brain aside and just focus on telling that story. And I know a lot of artists struggle with that. If they wrote the story themselves, then they start doubting the story, the storyline, the story beats, as they're working on the art. And I tend to get that out of the way and kind of say, okay, that's the story. Now I'm sitting down and drawing it. I'm not worrying about whether this is the best possible story that I could tell. This is the story I've committed to tell.
Right. And about how many revisions do you typically go through before you kind of say, all right, we're locked down. Let's get the art out.
Yeah. It depends. I mean, the Devil's Concubine took a lot longer. Like 10 years. Stiletto, I wrote pretty fast. I wrote a first draft. It had been ruminating in my head, obviously, for a couple of years, but I wrote the first draft in like a couple of weeks, and then I put it aside for a couple of months, worked on other stuff, and then I gave it to some people to read, got their feedback, and read it again myself, and there was hardly any editing going on.
Okay.
Whether that was a mistake, that will be up to the reader to decide. But yeah, I mean, you hear a lot about these. I went to film school not last year, the year before, at a master class in screenwriting, and one of the first teachers we had said something like, well, people start out here and they think they're going to do 10 rewrites, and then he laughed almost with glee and said, but no, we want you to do 100 rewrites. I'm like, you're a jerk. I mean, who wants to do 100 rewrites? If you have to rewrite something 100 times, then it's not a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Then you should just ditch that and go on to something else then. I mean, I have a hard time believing that any story will benefit from 100 rewrites. That's very little, excessive. To be honest.
Yeah, are your goals within your career as an artist, here's my question, because we talked to Jason last week, and Jason had some interesting things to say about his process. His process, but he only creates comic books. He's kind of a hobbyist, you would say, an extremely successful hobbyist. He works as a storyboard or a concept artist for DreamWorks during the day, and he makes his comics at night. So his script writing process is non-existent. He does thumbnails and writes notes to himself,
mm-hmm.
and almost composes his entire comic one page at a time. Which is like, this is like, I feel like in every textbook you get about how to make comics, they tell you not to do that. They're like, don't write your comic that way. But Jason,
it works for him.
I mean, successful at it, and it works. But I'm wondering, you learned script writing because you knew that might be able to connect you to different work, or was it about?
Yeah, I guess I've always been a movie buff, much more than a comics geek. I've written a couple of movie scripts, and my comics look very much like movie scripts. Mm-hmm. And I've read tons of books on writing and stuff like that. I just felt like I needed some kind of a shot of real knowledge. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm a self-educated artist, a self-educated writer, and the opportunity arose to join this masterclass 1 week out of the month for a year. So that was like a week out of the month where I could focus just on storytelling and talk about story with other writers, and I really enjoyed doing that. And it also gave me a way to kind of wiggle my way out of work. The problem with work is that any task expands to give to fill the allotted a time slot, right?
Right.
If, and with work as a freelancer, it's very hard to say no, and you just wind up with a calendar that's just full of other people's stuff,
right.
Work. So I was trying to get away from that.
Yeah.
So just being at school 1 week out of the month was like, well, I can't take on anything that week. Sorry, I've paid to go to this course, so.
Mm.
Yeah, so that was a transition. Then I was only working 3 weeks out of the month.
Are you so what is your status professionally right now? Are you still doing freelance work, or are you working full time?
Yeah, I am. I am. I'm trying to quit. but yeah, I obviously that's what well, right now it's comics that pays the bills in some sense, but I still take on like storyboard work.
Okay.
and stuff like that. I've written a couple of YA novels. I think it's four, three are in the, are out. I'm a couple of years ago, I thought I was going to transition completely into just writing. I was so fed up with drawing. But now drawing this comic is just great. I just love storytelling. And drawing comics, weirdly enough, is storytelling. I feel like I'm telling a story in pictures, and I have a lot of influence. I mean, the writer respects me as a writer as well. We have a great collaboration. I can go in and change lines or split up a panel into more panels or, you know, I have a lot of influence on the story itself, and I'm just enjoying that.
So the last comic I was reading, I wrote a short story, and I was working on it in thumbnails, and I got really frustrated because it was too slow. I couldn't draw faster, as fast as I can think of the ideas. And then I sat down and script wrote it, the rest of it, and it flowed way faster, but that's because I'm used to writing. Right. Like, I have the motor functions. But I think in comic scripting, and this is kind of cool because it connects to the point of the pod, well, to our month theme, but it forces you to go out of the land of, you're not necessarily thinking in pictures, but you are thinking of the sequences in your story that need to be broken down into images as opposed to dialogue. And it forces you to separate those two ideas in your mind of like words and pictures. And really list those things out on the page. It also does certain things that like you can't do in any other medium because you're thinking in static images, which means like it's like the Scott McCloud talks about in Understanding Comics where the character is not moving across the page. You're just showing three separate images that indicate the character has moved or two or one or like, you know, it's a lot more about symbolism. Yeah. And you have to do that even in the scripting phase. That doesn't just happen in the drawing phase. There is some of that in the scripting phase because, sometimes I guess. I guess there's certain authors who, I don't know. I haven't really read scripts for people who don't really think well in scripts. So,
Well, there isn't a set format, I think, for comics scripts. Some do very elaborate panel descriptions. I mean, I don't write panel descriptions because I know I'm going to be drawing it anyway. So I just basically write out the story, and most of my scripts probably is dialogue.
Yeah,
and that's what makes it into the comic anyway. So the rest of it is just notes.
It's
very fast descriptions of just what happens.
I feel like that's like the prototypical artist doesn't really write panel descriptions because they're like, well, I'm going to be drawing that. I just need a note in there to remind me of what I wanted to draw because it's already here. I did a collaborative comic last year where I was writing the script and somebody else was laying it out and penciling it and inking it to an extent. But it was funny because I realized how much I lacked as a scriptwriter because because he would read something and see a completely different thing than I had. And it actually, I had to balance what was going on the page because I'd be like, oh, your creative inspiration is good, but if you draw it that way, it's going to make it not make any sense 20 pages into the story when we do this thing, and I'll have to rewrite this entire sequence later on to make this one panel make sense because you changed the configuration. So I had to like think about that. And it made me realize when I read about like Alan Moore's writing process when he was doing Watchmen, because he would turn in Dave Gibbons, like single panels would be a page long of like description with a sub note at the bottom that said, oh, Dave, do whatever you want, but like these are what I'm thinking of, you know?
Right. Poor guy. But oh, man, that would kill me.
Paolo, what can you tell us to look forward to, and what are you working on now that you're allowed to talk about that we can?
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about the book that I'm working on right now, but Stiletto is not out yet in the U.S. and I'm hoping to find a U.S. publisher for that 120-page crime noir graphic novel. So I would look forward to that and obviously more content on Comics for Beginners as much as time allows me to to do that. But it's great that I'm working comics more or less full time now, because I get so many ideas for, well, wait a minute, that's a good little trick, I could share that. Sure. or whatever I'm learning, I try to pass that on. So
I really like the podcast you have going on your site. And your site is comicsforbeginners.com.
That is correct. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Nobody had bought that. That was weird. I didn't really know what to do with it, but I just, for some reason, tried Googling that, and it was free. It's like, what? Wow. Comicsforbeginners.com is, whoa.
And you're doing that. You're experimenting with some pay-for stuff on that, right?
I am, yeah, because I had a director attached to the project, and I have a web guy attached as well. So yeah, we've more or less made the... obviously, there's a lot of free stuff. We have a lot of free stuff on the newsletter, ebook, and stuff like that. But yeah, the videos themselves, the 10 tutorial videos are paid content. So you have to buy access to the videos, and I will also be available for comments inside the. If once you log in and watch the videos, underneath every video, there's like a comments field. So if you ask questions there, I'll answer them. So
and that's
that
I noticed
you access to.
Yeah, I noticed that there were some people that asked a question or two, and you replied back, and I thought that was pretty cool that they have access to the artist as well.
Yeah. Obviously, that's the least I can do. I mean, I really enjoy when people approach me. I had a guy come from he was in London, but he was an Australian dude who was on the newsletter, and he wrote and said he was going to be in Copenhagen for a couple of days. So I hung out with him.
Cool.
He bought me lunch. Thanks for lunch, Rob.
What's his name? And, actually,
his name was Rob. His name was Rob. I'm not going to give his entire name. Okay. I don't know where he wants to put it out there. But his name was Rob, and so we hung out for a bit, and I'm getting emails from people in the Philippines, and
wow.
Mexico, Thailand, Germany, Holland, all over the place that are finding some value in it and saying, you know what, that really helped me get through that first hurdle, or now I've started my comics project because of these videos that helped me get started, and that's huge. So yeah, I'm just enjoying that.
Do you do a lot of traveling?
I have been for the past couple of years going to the States quite a bit for conventions and stuff like that.
I think that first one you recorded that in San Diego, right?
That was in San Diego last summer. Yeah. When I was partnering up with Chris, my collaborator, who lives in New York. So we met in San Diego and ran around pitching to publishers and smoozing at the Hyatt bar and all that good stuff.
Right.
And I will be back this year for San Diego for sure.
Oh, cool. So, well, we will have to get together then.
Yeah, absolutely. We should do that.
That is our backyard.
Cool.
So tell us where tell everybody where we can find you online. You got your Twitter, websites, or
the best place to go would be comicsforbeginners.com. Obviously. We also, I keep saying we, it's just basically me, have a Twitter account and Facebook and all that. You can find me on there as well.
We artists have all multiple personalities, it's alright, the we is fine.
Yeah. That's cool. You guys are a we, I mean, you can say we with more
right.
weight behind it.
I guess it does stick a little more, but...
Maybe. But it's just me. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, cool.
Comicsforbeginners.com or if you want a sneak preview of Stiletto, go to stilettographicnovel.com.
Okay.
Yeah, I just looked at it. It's great. It's amazing.
Oh, thanks.
Really beautiful. Really good and definitely different looking than the other comic that you did.
Right. And Devil's Concubine.
I can see the jump in your just ability has progressed quite considerably between the two comics.
Right.
So that's really cool. And we'd love to have you on the MOOC that we were talking about, where we're talking to a lot of beginners about comic book stuff. So get in contact with me to get some details about that. But I would love to have you in as a guest talking about that stuff.
Great, yeah.
When we, 'cause we're going to do like weekly hangouts where people can ask pros questions in a live format like this. We'd love to have you.
Great. Awesome. I'd love to.
Cool.
It was great meeting you guys.
Absolutely, Paula. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great talking to you.
So as you're sitting there thinking, man, what a great conversation that was. Don't say I didn't tell you so. That was such a good conversation. There's just so many great things that we talked about, just from scripting to process to even what the comic scene is like in Copenhagen. It was just a lot of fun. One of the good things about hosting this podcast is I get to hear all the different processes that artists use as they're creating. And the basics are the same, but the execution is different, and in Pala's case, that is the same. The things he was talking about with the watercolor, that was really cool. I think that was in Stiletto. One thing he also said that I found really interesting, he said, if you have to rewrite something 100 times, then it's not a good story. Ditch it and go on to something else. I think that's really good advice. When I was working on a novel, decade or so back, I must have rewritten chapters of it just over and over and over, and at some point I just put it down because I didn't think it was good. And as time has gone on, I've gone back and read it, and there's just no story there. So I think that Pally's thought of having to rewrite it over and over and over really just should be a sign of something. I mean, that's one to certainly consider, and I think it's pretty good advice. If you want to see some of the things that Pale is doing, go to paleschmidt.com. That's PALLESCHMIDT.com. But most of all, definitely check out comicsforbeginners.com. If you're also, you know, a beginner and you want to learn some of the basics and just hear it from a really great perspective, definitely check this website out, comicsforbeginners.com. And I'll also list all these sites and links here and contact information for Pale there in the notes. Let me know what you think if you like that. If you got any questions for Pale too, you can either ask me and I'll pass them on, or certainly reach out to him on Twitter and or wherever, and on the website, and ask him yourself. So a couple other things before I sign off. Patrick's MOOC. Check this out.
We've reached a time in art education where learning can happen outside of the paradigm of what we know. And new educational concepts don't necessarily have to compete with old ones. They can exist beside each other. This is revolutionary. Get a Grasp, a primer course for getting your comics started, is our first step in offering a truly public art education centered around making comics. We'll have demonstrations, activities, guest speakers, professional-grade resources, and a thriving online community of practitioners for participants to collaborate with. So register for our first massive open online course for free by going to makingcomics.com/MOOC.
All right, I cannot wait for that. That's going to be a good time. I actually registered myself, so when you sign up, I will see you there. That starts in March, March 23rd to be exact. So go to makingcomics.com/MOOC and register for that. While you are there, sign up for the newsletter. The newsletter is awesome. That another one just came out a few days ago, actually, and the newsletter is rocking. So you guys got to go to makingcomics.com. Up at the top, click on the newsletter option and sign up for that. You can find me at Twitter if you feel inclined. I am at SDGreeny, That's SDGREENY. Hit me up. I make some silly comments, but most of the time I'm passing on some really good information. So you will definitely want to check that out. I guess that wraps up episode number 8 of Making Comics Gutter Talk. I didn't say my name in the intro, so my name is Adam Greenfield, if you didn't know it by now, an hour and 15 minutes later. So if you have been listening all along, you know what's next. All together now, be good to people.